This is Bach to Bach, the podcast opening up the world of classical music, one beer at a time.
And this week, we are shipping off the sea. So welcome back to another episode of Bach to Bach. I am Kevin Oates.
And I am Matty Oates.
We're brothers.
We are brothers. We're two classically trained musicians who just love to drink beer.
Except I can't. Thank you, gluten. By the way, today is actually the 1 year anniversary when I found out I couldn't drink gluten.
What was the scenario? When did you...
I had half a pizza and a Bissell Brothers, and then my finger swelled up, and I broke out in a rash and itched, and I felt sick. Well, so it was great.
At least you didn't, you know, do it halfway.
So, no more gluten for this guy from here till the end of time. But in the meantime, Matt will drink all the beer, and I will talk about all the music, and I'll have whiskey as well.
Drinking all the beer.
All of it.
Yeah.
And so we just finished up a whole month of the music of Benjamin Britten and the UK beers that kind of we paired with it.
Yeah, that was a lot of fun.
It was awesome, and it was a composer we never really talked much about in the past. But now we're going to go a little more mainland Europe.
Yeah.
And talk about the French.
My favorite.
They are, because actually there's a lot of things in this episode that are French terms that I cannot say well.
I'm standing by.
This is what you're here for.
Put me in.
So we're going to go back to the year 1903, listen to the music of Claude Debussy. Now, a lot of you may have heard of Debussy or heard his music. He was considered the first impressionist composer, but he hated that term. Again, impressionism, if we think about it with art, famous Monet artists.
Well, so this movement was happening adjacent to the impressionist art movement that was happening in Paris at the
yes.
time. Okay.
And so Debussy was born in 1862, actually August 22nd, a day before your birthday.
Hey, there we go.
Just a couple of years earlier. And then he died in 1918 in Paris. And he was very inspired by Tchaikovsky. He was very inspired by Frédéric Chopin, who is a well-known French composer, mainly for his piano works. But again, he really embraces impressionist movement, and you hear it in Debussy's music, even though he does not like to be considered an impressionist composer. It's pretty evident, I think.
You know what would be, just as a quick side note, would be fun to do, because I know I have a tough time envisioning where some of these composers overlap and who fed into who. If we at some point we should try to create a
composer timeline.
Yeah, and just something the overlap. People could just look at and see how these puzzle pieces all fit together and how the music evolves.
Spoiler alert, they're all dead.
Oh,
womp womp.
That just brings the whole episode
it
down.
It does. But this piece we're featuring today is called La Mer, which means, Matt?
The sea.
Or la sea.
Yeah, it's French for the sea.
Nailed it. This was written in 1903 and finished, late 1903 and finished in early 1905. So he kind of wrote it in a year and a half. And which for Debussy was actually abnormally quick. He was a very, very slow composer. Took his time, very meticulous, but he wrote this very quickly. And this is one of three orchestral works that he released that are comprised in three sections. And La Mer is the three sections, the three movements are what's called attacca, which we've mentioned before on this podcast. Attacca meaning attached. So it just goes, rather than a break between movements, which is fairly traditional, it just goes from one to the next to the next. And very inspired, obviously, by the sea. And you'll hear that. You'll hear the waves. You'll hear the ebbs and flows consistently throughout this movement. So this piece, the three sections, he actually composed this piece actually very far from any large body of water when he was writing this music. But he was actually used a lot of inspiration from paintings that are at the time that depict the sea, depict the ocean, and just large bodies of water, and kind of wanted to pull inspiration from that. But he actually, as a child, spent much time by the ocean and by the sea. And so he, between his memories and these paintings, were his inspiration. But I've brought my translator, Matty Oates, who happens to be right next to me.
That's me.
That's him. To read these in French, because if I tried, it would be disgusting. So, Matty, say each movement and then the English translation one by one. Hit it.
Okay, so the first one is Mer Belle aux Îles Sanguinaires. And so the Île Sanguinaire are this, it's this archipelago off the southwestern coast of Corsica near a town called Ajaccio, which is a really stunningly beautiful part of the world. I did a race there. That was my, I think one of my first races on Mariquita.
Well, heck yeah. And what's that translate to, the whole movement?
So that for the Merbel, so that just means the beautiful mother of the Sanguinaire Isles.
Okay.
And what? Then, so second movement is the Jeu de Vague. So Jeu is a game, so it's the game of the waves, which, as you were saying, it's going to sound like you can hear.
Yeah, you'll hear the ebbs and flows.
Hear them dancing and hear. Well, and that the dancing just leads into the next one, which is Le Vent fait danser la mer, which just means the wind does a dance with the sea.
Dude, you sound so fancy.
This is as fancy as it gets. Like, this is the zenith of it all right here.
You fancy. So, yeah, and so these three movements, they are, like I mentioned, they are attacca, back to back to back. So it's about 22 minutes worth of music. You really just use your imagination. Focus on the road if you're driving, but use your imagination otherwise. And like, let this work by Debussy really paint a picture of what he is envisioning the sea to be. And he actually finished composing this in 1905 in England, near the English Channel. And he just said it was like a perfect setting to wrap up this piece and really just... It was a nice closure to it. So when you get to the end of the piece, really see if you can get a sense of that English inspiration and just the environment around him at the time. But here is a great, great recording of La Mer. And when we come back, we will dive into some ciders and beers inspired by the sea. Yeah, so you mentioned something when we were listening to it was, like, you said his brass lines are great. And I think he had a really good sense of how to, like, use instrumental sections to create paint a picture on its own.
Oh, without a doubt. And it's funny because granted, I am the first person to admit that I'm not educated on Debussy, but I just never associated him with these huge, rousing brass lines like we just heard.
Well, and I think there's so many sections that work together to create these. So the brass as one have a very, especially in that last movement, very triumphant, very bombastic and punchy. But then behind that you have, I think, probably the most influential instrument in this piece is the harp. I think the harp creates all kind of the magical sounding by doing these sweeping glissandos up and down.
That's a great word, glissando. Yeah. Like, such a great word.
And it just creates such a texture that was perfectly written for this piece.
What's nice about that too, and a lot of people don't realize, we always picture the ocean and the sea as whenever there's big waves, we always picture them coming as one direction very steadily. And what's funny is there's sometimes up to three or four different currents. There'll be the primary, but then there'll be these other kind of, for lack of a better word, playful currents. And they aren't always playful. Sometimes they will really mess you up. But just, I feel like from my perspective, that's what I was hearing. And there was the driving force, but then there was also these little bits of sound coming in left and right. And just drawing your attention away enough.
The dialogue of the wind and the sea, and you can feel that contrast with one another. And what's really awesome is, do you think about this? Sounds very much like it's meant to be a ballet, but then it's also like it's incredibly well written to choreograph to. But also, like, this is so cinematic, and this is 1905. You know, this is, you can hear influences of current composers and current film scores influenced by the work of Debussy, like, especially go back to like 1940s and 50s films. And Debussy is such an influence. I hear a lot of, also, like, I'm not sure if this is in Fantasia or not, and this was like must, it's just asked for it to be in it. So
we should do an episode on Fantasia at some point. So Kevin, on a side note, Kevin and I have been on a kick watching with the launch of Disney Plus, watching the Imagineering story behind Disney. Now both Kevin and I have never been huge Disney fans
or ever been to Disney.
That's also true. But I am now on a kick. I want to go back and watch Fantasia. Ooh. We should do an episode on it at some point as well.
That we will. But Matt.
Well,
Matthew.
Yes, sir.
What do we have with us today?
Well, if you're listening to this podcast from anywhere in the Northern Hemisphere, you are probably digging out from under, if you believe the news reports, about 10 feet of snow.
Give or take.
So Hope you're all well. Hope you've done the digging. You're now inside. And I hope you are at the point where you can crack a nice cold beer. We are drinking. I'm on a beer called Maritime Lager, just in the theme of things today. It's from Newburyport Brewing Company. Now, if you don't know Newburyport, I'm not going to go too much into this, but it's a darling little town. It's just on the coast. It's right over the border from New Hampshire into Massachusetts. If nothing else, there's a lot of history there. It's rumored to be the birthplace of the U.S. Coast Guard.
Hey.
There is a bit of myth around that. There's some debate, but there's a bit of evidence. But if you ever are passing through, if you're driving up to Maine, which, of course, is a great idea because that's where we
are. Not in December when it's snowing like it is now, but...
Oh, they'll still try. They always still try. So this Maritime Lager, we went into the lagers a few weeks back, a few episodes back. And so I'm not going to dive into more info on that. If you want to hear more about the lager and the process behind lagering yeast, check out our earlier episodes from this from November. With this one, though, it pours a nice gold. It's not much to say. It's 4.9 ABV. It's nice honey taste. It's light. It's sessionable.
It's easy.
It's good. It really, in all honesty, it was the can art that attracted me, as is often the case these days with folks going into beverage shops.
But now let's talk about me.
You get to have your own drink that's not whiskey.
I get the drink.
This is exciting.
Yeah. It was a cider week.
It was up between this and a beer called Gluttony, which was a playoff on mutiny. Could be that too, but there was a gluten-free beer made by New Belgium. We're gonna have to hit that at some point in the future.
Absolutely.
But Kevin gets to drink a cider
that we actually feature on the podcast and not just drink randomly.
So ciders have been making a huge resurgence. You can probably speak far more to this than I can.
I can't because I actually don't drink a lot of cider.
Oh, I know, but in the fact of the gluten-free community.
Absolutely, it's huge.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's where it's really found its niche. Folks who want to enjoy a nice crisp beverage that isn't wine or isn't spirits.
Yeah.
So, and of course, we grew up in upstate New York, where there's tons of cideries all around the spot, and we're used to pressed cider. When we were growing up, thought of cider, we thought of the cloudy, dark brown stuff. The non-alcoholic stuff, unless you were like us and you left it in the fridge too long where it started to ferment.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's kind of our thing.
So we could have started a business.
Yeah, years ago. Anyway. But when we were 9. But Kev gets to drink Whaleback traditional cider today. Whaleback's up in Lincolnville, Maine. Their logo, actually. We need to geek out outside the episode on their logo. It's beautiful. So this place is run by a guy named Gene Cartwright, and he's come up. He does a lot of these great DIY cider courses in Maine, and does a lot of experimentation with grafting different fruit varieties onto trees to really bring out. Because as you go around New England, the apple orchards around here are sometimes hundreds and hundreds of years old, and it's only recently that I feel like they're actually coming into prominence in the fermented cider.
Yeah.
We've done pressed cider for ages. But Whaleback does everything from this traditional dry, which Kevin's drinking today. They do a barrel reserve, a peach damson, which I haven't seen damsons grown in New England.
Ted Danson? No, sorry, wrong word. Sorry.
tons in England, like damson gin is fantastic, but I've never seen it done with a cider. Damsons look like blueberries, but they're grown but on a tree.
Gotcha.
They're a little bit bigger as well, or kind of like almost like a between a blueberry and a plum. It's
a plumberry,
but they're super bitter, and they even do a foraged fruit one, which I'm assuming is cider based, but then they bring in other ones and let them ferment to bring in additional sweetness. So I'm excited by what they're doing, but
yeah.
This guy Gene Cartwright seems to really know the science behind his cider. So I think we're going to have to do a bit more on these guys at some point.
And what's really exciting is the amount of cideries and kombucheries that have opened up within Maine itself, let alone the entire country. It's become this huge movement and really supporting gluten-free drinkers. So we want to hear from you. Tell us your favorite cidery or kombuchery. And if you are a gluten-free drinker, what are your go-tos? What are the ones that you think you recommend to us?
My scarred memory of first time encountering cider was when I was 18 and I was like 2 liters of Strongbow. That was just, there were bad times. Really affordable though.
Affordablebadtimes.com.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
That's the definition of college.
But we'll be doing more. We will be delving more into the ciders and into the gluten free beers to get Kev on talking about it. What do you pick up from this?
My opinion, actually. So I don't like sweet ciders at all. Like I refuse to drink them. I just don't usually trend that way. And this dry one is just, it's a really well balanced. It just has this hint of sweetness, but still slightly tart. It's not overwhelming. Like I can usually have like about half a cider to one, and I'm good because I just feel full afterwards. But this is a great balance. The notes are just really, it's clean. It's a well made cider that it's very light in color, and it just has a lot of flavor to it, and without it being too overwhelming. So.
And they talk about their fermenting process. They use wild yeasts as well. So it's like a much longer, slower ferment. So you get like the flavor evolves where it's not, like you said, it doesn't just jump up and hit you in the mouth. Like this is, it's nice.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to have you in the mix for once, Kev.
I'm not left out. There we Huzzah. Go.
We're going to try for more of that. So happy December, folks. Stay safe. Stay warm and pour yourself a glass of something delicious, preferably beer or cider.
And if you find yourself having, I don't know, downtime, because that's the thing that people have, go back and listen to all our old episodes because you can see the progress of our sound. Maybe not our quality, but our sound.
Yeah, that's true.
But next week, we are diving into brand new territory. We're talking about 12-tone music. Matt has no idea what that is.
No, I'm excited to
learn that. It's mathematical. It's super nerdy. And also, we are featuring the beer of Goodfire Brewing next week, along with the music of Alban Berg.
I'm excited.
You should be.
Well, it is a violin concerto, so I'm double excited
for that. Fun fact for next week, any human being on the earth can play the first four notes of the piece we're featuring next week.
Is it all open strings?
It's all open strings.
I love it already.
Until then, though.
This has been Bach to Bach.
Cheers.
Cheers. Be sure to follow Bach to Bach on Spotify to get notified of the latest episodes.
And keep the conversation going on Instagram with us and follow us on all social media platforms at Bach to Bach. That's B-A-C-H-T-O-B-O-C-K. Cheers and keep listening.